For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website. Good morning. So many of us are here for the all-day sitting, and looks like maybe just as many are here for just the regular Zazen period and talk, and that is wonderful. I wanted to talk today about something that may not be so familiar to everyone here, and basically, I'm going to be talking about the three pure precepts, and they are part of the 16 bodhisattva precepts that we take. Some of us take, you know, formally, and others of us, you know, kind of informally practice as part of our tradition. I think maybe everybody's familiar with five precepts in particular, and they would be the ones about, you know, not killing, not stealing, not misusing sexuality, not lying or using false speech, and not intoxicating self or others. Those are, I think, the ones that people generally hear. And those are the first five of the grave precepts. And they are followed by another five that we practice, one of which are basically not to speak of the faults of others, not to praise self at the expense of others, not to act possessively, not to harbor ill will, and not to disparage the triple treasure. And the triple treasure is Buddha, Dharma, or Sangha. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Not or. But, you know, if you can get two out of three, maybe that's okay. But we're going to try for three out of three. And those 10 precepts together are the 10 grave precepts, but they are preceded by two other sets of precepts. The first is actually the three refuges. So we have the refuge, we chant, are we going to do it today? I'm not sure. I can't remember right now, but we take refuge in Buddha, we take refuge in Dharma, and we take refuge in Sangha, and those are the first three of our precepts. And those are followed then by the three pure precepts, which for us is I vow to embrace and sustain right conduct, and I vow to embrace and sustain all good, and I vow to embrace and sustain all beings. And this is a kind of, it's originated as a verse from the Dhammapada, which was sort of the original, you know, kind of written down teachings of Buddha, which were, and it went a little differently. The Dhammapada says, refrain from all evil, practice all that is good, purify your mind. This is the teaching of all beings. All Buddhas. So refrain from all evil, practice all that is good, purify your mind. This is the teaching of all Buddhas. And so in the Mahayana tradition, this was an early teaching of Buddha from the Theravada tradition. And the Theravada tradition is sort of the school of Buddhism that's very much focused on individual practice, individual enlightenment, and so it's a very individual thing. These are all things you can do. You know, you can refrain from all evil, practice all that is good, and purify your mind. The Mahayana view incorporates bodhisattva practice, which means trying to help all beings. In our Mahayana practice, we recognize that nobody really makes it to enlightenment unless we all do. You know, that what happens to one happens to us all. We recognize that there is not a distinction between self and others in important ways. And so So these precepts come out of the Mahayana Bodhisattva vow of saving all beings. And, you know, I think we can think about the pure precepts as showing us sort of the fundamental selfless design of the Buddha mind. And I'm going to try to demonstrate that to you in my talk. So the pure precepts, you know, vowing to embrace and sustain right conduct, vowing to embrace and sustain all good, and vowing to embrace and sustain all beings, encourages us to consider our motives with respect to our actions and with respect to our bodhisattva vow, and how can we align our actions with our beliefs. You know, how can one way might be just simply to ask, you know, what is most beneficial for others in this situation? Or am I putting my own welfare before that of others? We, in our daily lives, we often have to think about, you know, how do I take care of myself? But what these precepts encourage us to do is to open that to others. And so whatever thought I was having, it just departed. But you know, we can think about from this perspective maybe the evil that we experience, things that we experience in the world that are evil, or maybe just evil is the word, manifests often as the result of misunderstanding or misperceiving the interdependence of self and others. It's not that there is not in our world, we live as finite, you know, individual beings, but at the same time, we are fully connected with all of other beings, and we are fully interdependent with all other beings. And this is one of the things that we, you know, start to experience and appreciate as we sit in zazen, our interdependence. So the pure precepts show us how to purify the mind and how to let go of dualistic or selfish perceptions so that we can recognize our interdependence and benefit all beings. I think of, I'm a psychologist by profession, and we have a code of ethics that has very specific things about what you know, can and can't do in specific situations, but it's followed by a preamble of sort of guiding aspirations, like sort of, you know, non-maleficence. You know, we're supposed to act in autonomy. You know, we have sort of guiding principles that we adhere to the spirit of, and we try to enact the spirit of that as we follow, you know, these sort of specific ethical code. And I think that the three pure precepts are very much like that. This is a way of orienting our mind so that we can then practice the, you know, specifics of the ten grave precepts that follow, in the spirit of interdependence. And it helps us maybe make some decisions about what, you know, what is the spirit of the grave precepts, which without this sort of aspirational precepts, we could very much get caught in the details of, like, well, so if I told, you know, only a little bit of a lie, you know, but it saved other people, was that okay? These precepts can help us to answer some of those questions as we try to enact the precepts in our daily lives. So I want to talk a little bit about embracing. I'll start with the first one, embracing and sustaining right conduct. For us, we say right conduct. In San Francisco Zen Center, which is, we're kind of an offshoot of, they actually say, I vow to embrace and sustain forms and ceremonies. And for them, I think that that's a very appropriate wording, because they are, the three practice places of San Francisco Zen Center are generally more of a monastic setting. You know, they will do sort of formal practice periods. They have people who live there, and this is part of their daily practice. And they are following every moment of every day, you know, specific forms and engaging in specific ceremonies. And for us, as a non-residential sangha, we don't always have specific forms. We have some, you know, here that we learn over time. You know, we know that we, you know, bow when we walk into the zendo, and we bow to our cushion, and we bow to our neighbor, and we learn those over time. But we don't have the same, just not the same situation. But I will say that we still can very much be supported by our practice and by the forms of our practice to support right conduct. Because when we practice, even just coming here for a, you know, the morning zazen and a talk, or even just in maybe one all-day sitting, we're actually loosening our tendency to act according to our personal preference. You know, we volunteered to come here and, you know, show up, and yet once we get here, we can't just do exactly what we want. You know, maybe we feel like getting up and getting a drink of water in the middle of zazen, but we kind of say, oh, okay, yeah, I really feel like doing that, but here I am. I'm gonna sit here. So, you know, for those of us who are here for the all day sitting, we had to do things like, you know, getting up early, sitting still for long periods of time. We have to, you know, we're bowing, we're adhering to a schedule that has been printed out, and we can, you know, kind of consult with it. We have to be on time for things. We're eating only what is offered. We are working to look at, you know, in our work practice later on, we will be, you know, trying to not waste resources. And all of these very basic daily activities, when we're practicing them, allow us to loosen our self-centered views. Now, that aspect is maybe a little bit easier to do in a monastery where the conditions are set up to benefit us and, you know, not take advantage of us. And even here today, you know, we've tried to set up conditions so that they're fair and reasonable, and people aren't getting taken advantage of. And if they are, then we want to know about it. But our daily life in the world isn't necessarily set up that way. You know, our daily life requires us to not adhere to this in a rigid manner. You know, we do have to balance our own needs versus the needs of a community or the needs of our, you know, family members or friends. And so we're constantly having to balance those things. We don't want to act without regard for ourselves, but we don't want to act with too much regard for ourselves, and you know, both of those would be a manifestation of duality. So to engage in truly right conduct takes self and others into account. So it's, you know, so it's a practice. You know, it's not a formula. There's no one who can tell us exactly what the right way for us to be in any situation is. We have to kind of look, you know, and say to ourselves, you know, okay, is this right conduct? But we can think about, you know, how can we set up some structures or forms that are appropriate to your everyday activity. You know, you could decide that it would be helpful for you to have some discipline in your life that might involve, you know, okay, I get up and I make my bed, you know, and then maybe I sit for 20 minutes and then, you know, and then I go to work. And then maybe you can put other things in place that help give you a little bit of structure so that it's not you know, whatever you feel like doing. I think for me, in my practice, it was a big deal when I was able to move from, you know, sitting when I felt like it to, like, sitting when I had kind of decided I was going to do it. And so, you know, maybe we also can find others who can help us. We have our Sangha here, and we help each other practice when we're here. That was one of the first things I asked for today from everyone, as we, you know, many of us are taking on new roles. I said, you know, let's help each other. If you see me making a mistake or someone else, you know, correct, kindly or gently point it out. So we can find other people with whom we can be accountable. We can find other people to help us set, you know, some standards in our daily lives. You know, we really need other people to give us some feedback. It can be hard to see, you know, and very much hard to recognize sometimes the full impact of our actions. So we can give each other some feedback about whether our, you know, conduct really was right or if it, you know, had an unintended negative effect. So this is one thing that, you know, good spiritual friends can provide for us, you know, people that we trust. Otherwise, it's very hard to move beyond our individual perspective. So we've started to think about how we can, you know, engage in right conduct. And doing that, I think, helps us orient ourselves towards embracing and sustaining all good. You know, as we practice loosening our self-centered perspective, it becomes much easier to see what is actually good. You know, we think we know what is good, but sometimes that's really just sort of, you know, good for me. And so one way that we can distinguish this, as I was just mentioning, is to, you know, bring some mindfulness to our daily activity, loosening our dependence on what we feel like doing and doing whatever we're doing with full awareness. So, you know, full awareness that we are washing the dishes. That seems to be a big one that people like to, you know, zone out for. Or, you know, whatever, cleaning the toilet, flossing, you know, we can do all these things with full awareness. Oh, you know, full awareness that we are, you know, getting on the L train and we're sitting on the train. And it doesn't mean that we can't be also listening to music, but, you know, let's be present for it. Another way that we can start to distinguish what is really good is by, consulting with others, you know, especially others who are different from us in some way. You know, we can get some different perspectives. We don't want to necessarily want to consult with just people who share our same views, whatever they might be, or people who, you know, look like us. We want to think about how can we expand that. And one of the first things that came to mind for me and as an example of this is for anyone who has maybe worked a 12-step program for any reason, you know, the 12 steps involve kind of, you know, as you get into the middle of them, they really involve taking an inventory of ourselves and our actions and looking back over our lives and actually writing down, you know, people towards whom we feel like there's been a disruption in our relationship. Some people suggest, you know, let's start with people you resent. That's easy to figure out. And then as you know, if you're working this program, as you do that, you're encouraged by, generally people do this with the help of a sponsor, and you're encouraged by that person to reflect on, okay, so, you know, you resent them for doing this, but sometimes you can come to see that person did something to wrong you because often you did something to wrong them and you're not aware of it. And so recognizing those little places where there's a feeling of tension or a disruption or sometimes an outright rupture in a relationship is, as we, you know, are able to sit with that, that's an opportunity to see how we maybe acted in a way that was not really good toward that person. And so then what people do is they kind of, you know, develop a list of, you know, what it is that, you know, our own part in something was. Doesn't mean the other person doesn't play a part in whatever it was, but it means, you know, looking at our own part and sort of reflecting on, you know, what do we want to do about that? So, you know, generally people are encouraged to, very often, you know, contact that person, talk about it, apologize, see if there's a way to, work out a better relationship in the future. And so people do that once, and then that whole process is followed by, you know, kind of taking a continuous inventory. It's a lot easier to keep sort of reflecting that way after having cleaned up some of the harm that we've done doing our best to repair some of the harm that we've done. And so, So it becomes kind of automatic. You know, people go through this once with the support of someone that they've, you know, agreed to be accountable to. But then, you know, afterwards, it's much easier to do it on your own, and easier to check in with people as we often do about, you know, I'm sorry, did I step on your toes, or, you know, did this harm you in some way? So, you know, that's what I'm describing is something that is a formal process for someone in a 12-step program, but it is something that we can do in our lives, even in, you know, informal ways, and it's something that becomes easier through practice. You know, as we sit in Zazen, we are often visited by, you know, feelings of all kinds. Sometimes painful feelings, sometimes, you know, regret, sometimes remorse, and we can use that as, you know, a way to help us recognize, you know, what is actually good, and how could I turn myself more towards acting in beneficial ways for everyone. So that's another aspiration. I will say that, you know, when we do our service later, we're going to be, you know, chanting about all our ancient twisted karma that we, you know, fully avow. And that's kind of what I'm talking about here as well. We're sort of saying, okay, yeah, those things that I did, yep, that was me. Let's see what I can do. And yet, you know, it's also important to remember that we are just human. You know, as we continue to try to orient ourselves towards embracing and sustaining all good, you know, the effects of that, I think, can really transform us in ways that, you know, we start to become a little bit more comfortable with ourselves. You know, that the who we are is, we start to recognize that who we are is the product of a lot of different things that have contributed, and you know, maybe some of the unskillful things that we have done are things that we learned in some way in the past, you know, and that helps us to also recognize that who we are also includes others. Perhaps we were, I know Teigen likes to use the example of, you know, who remembers their third grade teacher? Anybody remember their third grade teacher? Okay. Maybe, you know, we can think about a time when our, you know, third grade teacher yelled at us for something that we did and we felt, you know, horrible, but then we, you know, later went on to be just as judgmental towards, you know, some other kid or some other adult who's doing that same thing. And it's, you know, so it's, that's a way in which, you know, the me that's here is, you know, partly sort of an echo from the past and partly not even really me, but it's, you know, we can start to untangle, I guess, some of our unskillful actions. And so as we start to untangle our unskillful actions and we embrace and sustain all good, I think this helps us to start to embrace and sustain all beings. I think this precept really involves, you know, recognizing and embracing the differences in all living beings and trying to act in ways that respect and support their well-being. That sounds like a tall order. It sounds like, you know, kind of almost like our four bodhisattva vows, but like our bodhisattva vows, it's something that is enacted in, you know, just each moment. You know, if we can sort of be present with what we're doing and not be so judgmental about what we're doing that we try to block it out and ignore it, but just, you know, we find it easier to act in ways that respect and support all beings. You know, there's a koan that probably many people have heard. A monk asked Yunmen, what was the Buddha teaching his entire lifetime? And Yunmen says, an appropriate response. And I think that embracing and sustaining all beings is part of that appropriate response. You know, as we give up some of the picking and choosing and doing what we feel like and doing, you know, kind of what's good for me and thinking about our best interest and expanding those a little bit, I think it makes us able to see ourselves and others more clearly. We might begin to see, you know, aspects of ourselves and others that were previously invisible to us. And it's maybe important to try to make an effort to see ourselves through the eyes of others, especially others who, you know, who can maybe feel very different. It's often, you know, others can often see us, see aspects of ourselves at least, more clearly than we can. And so it's important to be able to allow that feedback. And I feel like one example of this that is very much, you know, kind of a topic that people talk about a lot these days is the dimension of our lives of privilege and intersectionality. Many people find it difficult to accept that different aspects of our identities as human beings confer some degree of privilege on some and remove, you know, some privileges from others. And so I think it comes up around race a lot, but there are lots of other different dimensions. There's, you know, any area really in which human beings differ. There's some status, you know, some aspects of that difference that convey privilege and some aspects that remove privilege. So we have, you know, things like race or gender or sexuality, age, income, religion, physical ability or disability, education status. There's probably a lot more that I haven't thought of. But all of those dimensions have, you know, statuses that are privileged and statuses that are not privileged. And so it's important to recognize that there are some, you know, for all of us, there are some places in our lives where we hold privilege and there are some places in our lives where we don't. It's important to, and it's painful, I think, for many people when they start to explore this and recognize that, I didn't think that I was having something that, you know, other people were denied or that I had this advantage that others didn't have. But it's important to see and it's important to not push away because that's really the only way that we can begin to work with others. We don't need to ignore all the ways that we're different. It's important maybe to really embrace and sustain that, but to recognize the parts of our lives or the spheres of our lives in which we do have some privilege, you know, to try to find ways that we can extend that to others who don't, you know, so that we can help the world to be more fair and balanced in those ways. You know, so this will help us to embrace and sustain all of us as whole beings. I think that is most relevant right now in a lot of how we are engaging with the world. You know, our world seems to be moving towards an increasing level of polarization. You know, every day in the news, there are whether it's nationalism or binary thinking or, you know, kind of black-white thinking, we are hearing stories of, you know, bombings, shootings, violence of all kinds. You know, yesterday, people meeting to worship and celebrate their faith, just like us, were gunned down in their synagogue. And that was, you know, the day after a whole bunch of you know, prominent people who have spoken critically about the president received pipe bombs in their mail. You know, so it's very tempting, I think, in those kinds of moments to blame, you know, a particular person. You know, I think I'll just leave that out. You know, we can blame, you know, maybe conservatives, maybe some people want to blame liberals, you know, we can blame, you know, pro-gun people or alt-right, but blaming maybe doesn't help in the way that we do it. You know, what if we were to refrain from the temptation to blame, to make an other out of some group and then hold them responsible for something? What if we, I think that if we could think about how to bring this precept of embracing and sustaining all beings to the situation, you know, I think we could maybe think about refraining from creating self and others. So there are lots of factors maybe that are contributing to you know, the shootings yesterday in Pittsburgh, or the pipe bombs, or you know, some of the other church shootings or school shootings, all of the violence that has been happening. There's so much I can't even, you know, single out a specific example. But what if we were to try to find a way to embrace and sustain the beings who have maybe contributed to those situations? So I think that this, I guess I'm trying to sort of summarize this and say, I think that this precept has a lot to do with refraining from creating self and others, or us versus them. We want to think that, you know, we're right and they're wrong, or we're good and they're bad, but this precept, I think, encourages us to break that down and recognize that them is, there are so many, you know, entangling vines or intertwining tendrils between us and them that we have to sort of recognize that it's us, you know, it's us versus us. And how can creating a them really causes harm by that very definition. So how do we hold on to, and embrace and sustain individuals who are causing harm in some way, and not to accept the harm, but to help that person, you know, to reintegrate, to become come back to the wholeness, and help them to recognize, you know, what's going on in them that's causing them to do this. You know, when we are able to take this attitude towards the 10 grave precepts, we're much more able to then, you know, sort of act together, you know, in harmony and interdependence with life. So when we are, you know, thinking about not taking life or not stealing or not, you know, using false speech, we're able to take that from a perspective of recognizing that we really are all, you know, connected and all part of a larger whole. So I'm hoping we can have a little bit of discussion, but I wanted to raise, you know, maybe some questions to think about either this afternoon for those who are staying for the all-day sitting, or, you know, to take with you about the three pure precepts. And one is, you know, how can we help others to refrain from creating self and others? How might we be able to knit back together some of the ruptured relationships in our society that create, you know, kind of an us versus them situation? Another question would be, you know, how can we help and support others who don't even know that they need help with this, or maybe don't want help with this, or really regard us as, you know, others? And then my last question would be, you know, how can our Zazen practice help us in this task of healing some of the divisiveness that is causing all of us a lot of pain? So I know that Everyone, as I said, everyone for the all-day sitting will be here to ask questions in the afternoon. But I wondered if anyone who's just joining us for the morning would like to say anything or add to the conversation, or you know, if anybody has any questions about anything, please feel free. We've got a few minutes. Is that it? Okay. Kathy.
Or come to understanding that people are coming at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes I think that involves a lot of listening, you know, listening and asking skillful questions about how did another person whose views seem, you know, so different from maybe mine, you know, that they seem wrong, how did that person come to develop that, you know, that something shaped that person. And learning more about that is maybe important as part of healing everything. There are really as many perspectives in the world as there are people, I think, and so the question of, you know, with whatever it is, 8 billion different possible ways of viewing something, you know, how can we say, you know, this set is right and this set is wrong and never the two shall meet? You know, how do we find a way to inform each other? Because I think that's the other thing is, you know, how do we each find a way to feel empowered and to help others feel empowered to use our voices to inform each other about, you know, what it is? Dennis. Yeah, I can try, but I'm just one person. Well, I've felt that. You know, I think maybe we've all felt that when you're angry, it's just, anger has a physiological effect on us, right? So, like anxiety, when we're angry, our focus narrows. We can, you know, to handle the task at hand. And so things can seem very black and white. It feels like, you know, this is the way and I'm right. And And there's, I think, a little bit of adrenaline. And so, you know, maybe part of it is that the energy of the state almost maybe wants to keep perpetuating the state, you know, until you just get tired. And maybe once it kind of winds down, you know, like a little kid with a tantrum, you know, you kind of have to just let it run its course. But we don't always get the opportunity, or you know, the hypothetical person that you're talking about, you know, maybe doesn't get the opportunity because, you know, then there's another thing, and it's like it just kind of keeps the energy going.
Well, I was thinking, watching perhaps a certain news channel, which I don't remember, could be kind of like promoted to people. You know,
yeah. Well, it's very energizing. Yeah. Well, and it's like any addiction, it doesn't allow much of, you know, the rest of life to intrude in that moment. You know, so you kind of have to like quiet things down to be able to, you know, recognize that this isn't so good for me. This feels very energizing in the moment, but you know, the rest of my life is suffering. And so maybe that's another part of it, you know. And it's hard to, I don't know. People often turn to addictions when they are feeling things like hungry, angry, lonely, tired. It's something that will sort of energize that state that we don't want to be having. And so, you know, we can go to that. I don't think I'm addicted to anger, though. So, you know, for me, it kind of, you know, it winds down, and then, you know, we can move on and try to find some other way. But it's very hard to think clearly about anything and or respond skillfully when we have that much energy going on. You know, when there's that much adrenaline, you kind of need it to just dissipate. So, I think. Tom, I'll get to you, but I think Lisa had her hands up.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't know. I kind of struggle with, and I completely understand, you know, embrace everyone and everyone's opinions and so forth, but then sometimes it feels like, well, does that lead to too much complacency? Like, do you embrace Hitler or Stalin? Be complacent about that because it feels so complacent when you are.
I do. I think that that's the that's kind of, you know, part of the struggle around right conduct. The whole self versus others. To let go too much of our own perspective is just as damaging as to overlook others' perspective. That is that dynamic balance that we have to find. You don't want to allow people who are causing harm to continue to cause harm. You know, so that maybe sounds like it flies in the face of what I'm saying, but I think we have to hold all of those things lightly. You know, we can't hold on to any of them as an absolute. It is important to figure out how to let others' perspectives inform us, but we also have to allow our own perspective to inform us. And sometimes when someone is causing actual harm, we do have to stop them so that they can't continue to cause actual harm. Doesn't mean that we, you know, toss them out and say, okay, forget about them. You know, they're not part of the equation anymore. We maybe need to continue to try to work with them, but not allow, but removing their ability to cause harm. Okay, thanks. Tom, I think you might be the last person.
Well,
but
I just wanted to offer a perspective on this question of addiction to anger. We have this body-mind duality as our habit in the West, But in Chinese medicine, we understand that there are constitutional types. And constitutional types have proclivities.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those might be anger. And it's quite a common type because we encourage the effort to be out ahead of the game in our society. And that, in fact, is the same origin as anger.
Yeah, you know, that kind of goes back to the three poisons of greed, hate, and delusion. That I read somewhere that, the Buddha would try to recognize, you know, which of the three poisons or hindrances was, you know, kind of motivating a person at a particular time, and try to help someone out of that, out, you know, from that perspective. I read informally that you can, like everybody has their particular, you know, poison. Some of us are much more motivated by greed, some of us are much more motivated by anger or hatred, and some of us are much more motivated by delusion or confusion, and so there have to be different teaching approaches. I've never been able to figure out which one I was. But so I'm not sure that I believe that that's, you know, that much of an absolute either, but yeah, everybody is kind of has their own characteristic energy.
What I refer to is the five phase or five element system, which is the universal correspondence.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And that then offers the idea of the antidote.
Okay. Yeah. So how would you apply that? Just for someone who's angry, just be kind? Or
sure.
Okay, all right. Fine, help them figure out what it is that they want, and
where are you coming from?
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Which is what you just said, where are you coming from?
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you.